This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hello, how you doing? I'm Craig Parkinson. You are listening to the Two Shot Podcast. Sit yourself down, pop the kettle on. We're going to have a nice old chat. Who's in with this week? I'm going to tell you right now. Happy Thursday. How the devil are you? Good week? Bad week? Either way, let's just get a nice big cosy jumper on, turn the heating up, and let's settle down. It's episode 26 of the Two Shot Podcast. Thank you so much for subscribing, downloading, telling people, and joining us, more importantly. That's the main thing. What have I got to say? I've got to say, it's episode 26. It is with the fantastic Poppy Miller. As ever, as we always do, we've been trying to make dates work with Poppy for a while. And I knew that she was packing up all her stuff and moving for quite some time to New York. Now, if you have seen Harry Potter and the Cursed Child over the past year when it was in the West End of London, then you'll have seen Poppy as Ginny Weasley. You may also have seen Poppy in the second best Marigold Hotel. You may have seen her in the great film Emma years ago. You may even have seen her in Attachments, which we do talk about a little bit anyway. So, yeah, we got the dates to work. Poppy came down to meet me and producer Griff when we were in Soho. A big shout out to Maison Berthaud, who were kind enough and generous enough to give us some space and some delicious tea for this episode. What else do I have to tell you? I have to apologise, not for us, for other people who were slightly noisy at the top of Tanya's tea room. But you know what? She's got a business. That's just the way it is. It's still a fantastic episode. So a massive shout out and massive thank you to Poppy, and all love and luck to all the cast of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child over in New York City. This one is for you, and it's also for you. Enjoy. It's episode 26 with Poppy Miller.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Things change, don't they?
They do change, yeah.
I mean, in a fantastic way. I mean, I've talked about it before, but your perspective changes and you go, Oh, it's not about me anymore, is it?
We're kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the last time I saw you was working with the lovely Susan Lynch and you were around a bit and none of us had kids.
Yeah.
That was at the Alameda.
It was?
Yeah. So, everything changes.
I know. But you know, the first time I ever saw you, you don't know, do you?
Yeah.
What? Why?
Oh. Your first job.
Yeah, that's why I didn't know if you remember.
Yeah.
Because you know who I'm very close to now is Sally Rogers.
Oh.
Yeah. who
is going to be in
who is going to be in New York at the same time. How weird is that?
Yeah.
How do you feel about taking the family over?
I'd say, like, if you were to say, oh, so, you know, tell us all about New York at the moment, Poppy, and I'd say, yeah, well, this chapter's called A 6-Year-Old Goes to New York. It's not about me at all at the moment.
Yeah. And have you had to find another school and everything?
Yeah. That's all been kind of quite smooth, actually.
Has it?
Yeah.
Are you going to be there for a year?
More. 15 months, yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah.
Is it your first time, isn't it? Is it first time on Broadway?
For me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I played BAM, Brooklyn Academy of Music.
Right.
That was brilliant. That was just for a few weeks. And in fact, just a bit of background about said child, she's, I won't bang on about it, but she's adopted and she'd only been with us for 7 months then. And she came with us, which was quite cool.
Wow.
She was like under two.
Oh my
God. So she has been there before, but she won't remember that. She was just really, really, really cold.
She's going to remember this.
She's going to remember this. Yeah, she was asked what she wants to do in New York. And, well, she's there, you know, something exciting. And she wants to go deep sea fishing.
That can be arranged, I'm
think
sure.
It probably
it's New
can,
York.
Actually.
You can do anything and get anything at whatever time you want.
Yeah, we're living quite close to the water. Which eventually is the sea, isn't it?
Yeah, so you're right, sort of the other side of the Hudson. Because I lived in New York for 6 months.
Oh, did you?
And we were West 71st and Columbus Avenue, so we were more near Central Park.
Yeah.
But still, I think sort of 15, 20-minute walk right into the centre of Times Square, which is still a buzz.
Yeah. So you looked at that bit of water?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What's that called?
What, the Hudson?
On the left. So, is it?
It should be easy. New York's like one of the most easiest places to walk around because it's all a grid system.
Yeah. So there's the water on the right between Manhattan and Brooklyn. What's that called? I need to find this out.
I don't know.
Yeah.
This is, if for any of our audiences listening in America, I'm very, very sorry about my knowledge.
I did discover something about the, you know, the FDR highway that goes up the east side of Manhattan?
Yes.
The core of that is ballast from boats going from the UK to New York during the war, and that ballast was often composed of rubble from the Blitz.
Was it?
What about that, then, eh?
Look at that. Knowledge.
Yeah, going deep. So, quite excited, yeah.
Oh, it's going to be such a buzz for you.
Yeah, really, really amazing.
So it's a long way from Norwich.
Yeah, it's a long way from Norwich. It's from and yeah, who'd have thought? And also, just without dwelling on it, I think it's you've probably done this. You go away for a big chunk of time, and it's the really old people you worry about. Like, so my mum's in Norfolk and she's 93. So, you know, that's all a bit weird, but
she's gonna miss you. Because, I mean, I take it she'd be too old to...
She's not very portable. She's in a wheelchair and stuff, so... Yeah, we'll have to Skype. Even that's a bit of a... But we'll sort it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is it just you when you were growing up? You had brothers and sisters?
I had four big sisters. I'm number five.
Right.
I've got four big sisters now. So the eldest is, like, 17 years older than me.
Right.
And then two more were the same age... A year after that one, and then my next biggest sister's 9 years older than me.
Wow. Yeah. Good relationships with your sisters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much kind of. I think if you're the youngest of a big family with loads going on, you do a lot of kind of watching, maybe a bit pliant, you know. I've been accused of being a bit, float, you know, go with the wind. You adjust a lot.
Yeah, of course.
Not by them. They always said, oh, you, everything, you know, that classic, oh, it's all right for you. Everything was fine for you. All the rules have been...
Broken because you're the baby.
And so growing up, although it was a big family, I ended up just me and my mum from the age of 12 for about 6 years. So it was sort of big and small at the same time because they'd all left home and my parents had split up by then. So, you know, I'd had a bit of busy times and... quiet times. they, two of them had kids quite young. So actually my nephews are closer in age to me than my next sister.
Right.
And we're good friends and they've got little kids now and we're sort of, we're not like siblings, but we hang out a lot. And,
yeah.
You know.
And what about primary school?
Primary school,
good times.
It was quite good. It was, I think it was, so it was in the '70s.
Yeah.
And, it was fairly new build, I think. And, they were doing something in this school, so it's a state like, primary.
Yeah.
But they were trying to kind of do this sort of open plan learning in this school. So right. When I describe what we did to people now, they're like, you did, we marked our own work and stuff.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah.
And we had...
Was it a case of passing books to other people you were marking, or you were marking your own work?
No, they had this box with, like, the colours went from, like, mud to silver.
Yeah.
You know, the way people think of colour. It's like, nah. You know? So the silver was
mud,
like...
Mud bad, silver good.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd sort of... And I think that was for basically letters and numbers. And then there were other stuff like projects and loads of art. I didn't... Did you have that same thing growing up, that there was a lot of sugar paper and art materials that you don't see so much now?
Yeah, very craft-based. Yeah.
A cupboard with
paper. Yeah, it was always a big craft cupboard.
And you could use the... guillotine.
Yeah, the guillotine. Yeah. Oh, I love the guillotine.
You could, being allowed to use it.
Can you believe that? You wouldn't see that nowadays, would you?
Well, you know London Graphic Centre, just to say.
Yeah.
You can use the guillotine in there.
Right. I think we should stop the podcast now. Let's go around.
You've got to buy yourself some paper.
Fuck
first,
it, we'll buy some. Let's do it.
But then you can go and use it for free. It's really great. Just stay at the guillotine for ages. So, yeah, it was like that sort of school. Like, one year, I remember we all... they had this thing in the Lord Mayor's Show in Norwich and everyone sort of used to walk for miles down to the castle. And there's a whole dragon thing going on in Norwich. It's a medieval thing. I don't know. And I remember us making, like, a dragon big enough for the whole class and just all getting green trousers on and walking into town in this dragon. It was that kind of thing, you know. So quite nice memories of all that. And, yeah, the marking, you'd mark your... You'd basically, you were kind of going through the colours and you'd do your work. And I, what I remember is you'd then go and check your... Ooh, mint tea.
See, look at this. Producer Griff, bringing tea.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Griff.
Yeah, you'd go and mark your own work and see how you're doing. Yeah. And then we did a project, which I don't even know if that exists anymore, when we were 11. This probably does all tie in with acting at some point, but... called
even if it doesn't it's still nice, it's fine.
MACOS, which was MACOS, and it was called Man, A Course of Study. Not Man, yeah.
It was the '70s.
Yeah. Hey man. And every other year you would get to do it, and I was in the MACOS year, and it was quite cool because you'd do, like, I suppose it was like anthropology really. Like, you'd study seagulls, baboons, salmon, humans.
The chain.
But loads of stuff around it, like, you know, you'd have to find solutions to stuff.
Yeah.
Project work, really.
So you enjoying school? You have a good time? Do you have good memories of primary school? Because I speak to some people and they go, yeah, I don't really have... Either I have bad memories or I don't have any memories at all.
Right.
Or it's been blocked.
No, okay. Vest and pants, PE. Wasn't sure about that. You had to do PE in vest and pants. Did you have to do
even
that?
If you didn't have your kit?
You didn't have any kit. You were not outdoors, you were indoors in your vest and pants.
No.
Didn't like that.
No.
Wasn't sure about that.
I'm still not sure about that now.
I don't think you'd be allowed to do that.
That's all shades are wrong, surely.
I used to really like the food. You know, I loved the Spam fritters and the custard, personally.
I always had to have a packed lunch.
Oh, okay. Didn't like it.
No, because you had to pay.
Did we have to pay? I don't think.
Well, we did. I mean, I think nowadays... You know, school dinners are free, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, no. I think we had to certain pay.
I wouldn't remember paying, would I?
No.
Wouldn't it be me paying?
No.
But you... Happy I was. I did enjoy it. I remember being... and this is a little bit of a theme, like slightly on the outside, but having, like, currency to get... You know, my currency was, for quite a while, I remember, you know those... pencils that are watercolour pencils.
Yeah.
So I used to be able to do bubble writing on people's arms.
Did you?
So basically a temporary tattoo of their name or whatever.
got the skills there.
Quite well, yeah. But I did spend quite a lot of time sitting around reading at break time.
You're a big reader?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
You're still a big reader now?
Not so good these days.
It's the time, though.
It's the time, and it's the finishing the books.
I know.
Do you read?
I do, but it's, again, if I've got the time, I would love it. It's like, you know, if you go on holiday, and I've got a six-year-old boy, and I would love nothing better than to just sit down like by the pool, if I can ever, you know, get the time to go on holiday. Yeah. Just sort of sit down and at least get 3-4 pages...
straight through.
Without,
well, that's
without
not too
sort
ambitious,
of, you
is
know,
it?
Being thrown in the pool or wanting to play. And you know what? The books will be there this time with him,
I'm thinking that basically that's going to be like the last 20 years of my life. It's going to be
just reading.
And, but I've got to, you've got to move as well, otherwise,
Oh, yeah, movement is important.
Bit of moving and reading.
Yeah.
Yeah, and trying to get off these phone things, you know.
God, I know.
Yeah.
My little boy tells us off about...
Yeah, good.
He says, you know, we don't need this technology. I went, oh, hi.
Amazing.
Whose child are you? Let me just send this email.
I'll be with
you in a minute.
Yeah. You think they can't see you.
Oh, God,
it's terrible,
I know.
Isn't it? Of course they know.
But they see and hear everything.
There's a quality of silence about someone who's on their phone that they can sense.
But can your child hear... everything in family kitchen. Sometimes if I'm whispering to my wife, I go, look, the thing is, and all I hear is, I heard that.
Yeah.
Or he caught me swearing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Of course.
Terrible. He went, you can't say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't say fuck. I went, don't you say that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they start saying it and then they say, well, I heard it. And then they say, I was only saying it to the ground, which is the same sort of argument, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I remember when my little sister, she's 10 years younger than me. Let's have a sip of tea. And she was playing football with my dad in the garden. I had left home at this point. I think I was just started at London. And he said, I can't play football now. I've got to go and watch Emmerdale. And she went, Emmerdale. And she was very young. She went, Emmerdale's for wankers. But it was just something. It was so innocently said. She didn't know what it meant.
Yeah.
And my dad had to sort of stifle his laugh and sort of turn around and go, you can't say that. Just come in. Because it came from such a lovely, innocent place.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think initially that's what happens with children.
Completely.
Because they just hear it in the playground. And they don't really know what it means. So there's no... venom
they do,
or malice.
Mine started saying in the summer, I mean, she stopped now. She's going, I'm just a fuck it. I'm a fuck it.
No.
Which actually wasn't the swearing that mattered. It was the self, you know. It's like, oh, God, you know.
They
pick all that up, don't they?
Yeah, of course they do.
You know. She did say the other morning, I finally got this curtain not hanging off a string. And this guy had put it on a rail.
Yeah.
And she'd been there when he did it. And I heard her saying in the morning, Daddy, whatever we must do, we must not wank this curtain. Brilliant. Yeah.
Seems that wank and wankers are a theme.
She is right. What I do remember, I do remember having an acting moment at the primary school. It's a sort of theme of that school and my secondary school is that there wasn't really any drama or any... It just sort of happened a bit. I think it's...
Because apart from...
more now.
You know, there's things at Easter and Nativity.
Yeah.
The little plays that come on.
Yeah.
But I think it does happen more now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, more and then in some places,
In a lot of places now, less. And as things are off the curriculum.
Or getting sliced. Yeah.
Which I feel are very important, which I think they should be on. Not that every child needs to go and do drama. They don't need to. But if they dip their toe in it, and then they decide it's not for them because I need to go and play my football, I need to go and play my hockey, or I need to... That's fine, that's another...
Well, like my nephew's like... He's just decided he really can't stand it, but he really wants to do the backstage stuff.
Incredible.
Yeah. He really loves that, like... If he sees something, he's 15. Like if he sees something, how did that happen? And he's full of theories about, you know, how they made someone do that, or, you know, all of it. That's what he sees. He doesn't see the stories.
Another form of being an artist and being, you know,
and a bit of a scientist and a bit of a, you know, Yeah.
How does that
so
work?
So that whole world, yeah. That's also, it's a brilliant world.
But what about you in primary school? When was the...
Oh, it was just getting...
Sorry, we're going off on right old tangents
already. Yeah,
yeah. Which is grand.
It was about... Oh, it's really standard, really. It was a nativity experience of just getting a massive laugh and going on a bit of a roll, which I think when you're a shy kid, you know...
Were you quite shy?
Yeah, I think... Well, a bit of both, you know. What is shy? Like, definitely one of those performers who... just you kind of feel... As a kid, felt a sort of release in it, a freedom in it, like a kind of lack of self-consciousness. I think I was very self-conscious as a kid.
Right.
Which is exhausting.
Well, it is, because I know when I'm self-conscious, I get quite tense.
Oh, yeah.
And so my tension, and that is just, you carry that around with you for however long, it's quite exhausting.
And you're trying to second-guess everything you present.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're never going to get it right.
No, because you're paranoid of judgment and other people thinking.
How many people are you with, and each of them's got a different perspective. So, you know, it was tiring. Did a lot of blushing, a lot of sweating.
When did things like that change? Still like that at secondary school?
Yeah.
Probably even more so because you were
growing up. Secondary school's quite scary as well.
Well, it is, because, you know.
It's huge.
The transition is huge. Yeah. You're going to the big school.
Yeah.
And also you're growing up.
All going on.
And so you're less free as a child because, you know, there's no boundaries with young children because they're just free to play and they don't mind what's going on. And
no.
Little sponges, and then you start to grow up and clam up.
I remember that particularly happening, like, the second year of secondary school. Hello.
Because you were changing.
Well, I think because everyone sort of turned up. I mean, I think kids might be different now. They might do all this earlier. I don't know. Because we were quite naive then, weren't we? No social media, like so much less telly. A lot of stuff that was a bit weird.
Well, that's coming to light over the past few years,
yeah.
Which I think we probably knew at the time, but...
Oh, yeah.
Well, I did anyway. I certainly
always
thought certain things were...
Completely.
Very odd.
Very odd. Yeah. Don't want to get too specific, really, do
we? I think everybody knows what we're probably talking about anyway.
And
if you don't look it up on the internet, 1970s DJs, Top of the Pops, you'll be glad.
Yeah, and certain people in your school life that you knew were like ...
Yes.
Yeah. To some degree, you know. Adult people. But what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, so all the kids would turn up after, like, middle school, like, from all over the city in Norwich, because it's not huge, but it's... And they'd sort of all mix in that first year of school.
So right.
There's 360 of us in each year at that point. It's quite big.
How many?
It was a big school. It was 1,800.
Gosh.
Yeah, big.
Yeah.
Like, sixth form. And I just remember thinking, like, everyone was just somehow sort of together at that point. And then they started to work out that a bit more, that they didn't fit together. Like... So this girl, I can't remember her name, we were friends, and she said to me, did I want to go to the Samson Hercules with her? So I was 12.
What's the Samson Hercules?
It was a nightclub. And
at 12?
I know, 12, God, 13, I know.
That's pretty young.
And I thought, I ought to sort of want to go, because
that's cool. Did you feel that you wanted to step up and be part of the cool kids?
So I kind of innocently said to my mum, you know, and my dad... I just realised my dad, if he were alive, he'd be like 100 in 3 years' time. So they were born in the 1920s.
Yeah.
And, panic, you know, utter panic. So of course I wasn't, you know. So then it was like, and then I realised that it was quite odd that she was there. Maybe she was just like pretending she was going or something.
Yeah.
But she was 13. She looked quite grown up, but how the hell did she get in? Anyway. Anyway, we were mates, and then we just weren't mates after that year. We sort of went into our kind of cliques, our clans.
Did you have a little group?
Yeah, especially later on in school. A little group. Yeah, some of them were from primary school, and then some of them were like There's a lot of music in my school, so...
Were you musical?
Yeah.
Oh, were you?
A lot of music, yeah.
Were you more musical than academic?
I was quite clever in the sixth form. That was my high point. And further down the school... No, I was quite good at most of the subjects. I was always quite confident around that.
Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it in the sixth form, when it was more sort of focused.
Were you focused... Was it more like that in the sixth form because you were focusing on subjects that you cared about more?
Yeah, and I just think I understood a bit more why we were doing it rather than this sort of scatter all these subjects that, oh, I don't know, I just didn't click into... I did quite O-levels, as they were called.
I remember the O-levels.
And CSEs, and I did fine. So I just didn't really get it at that point. And then I think I just got really into it in sixth form.
And was there any path that you thought at that point, oh, yeah, I'm going to try and follow that, or this is what I kind of want to do?
So the recurring secret dream was always to be an actor or actress.
Was it?
Yeah. But the...
Not that you told anybody.
I do remember telling people... But I remember the occasions when I told people. And I did loads of Amdram and stuff.
Did you?
In the city of Norwich.
When did you start doing that? Were you doing that as a young child?
No, not as a little one. So the closest to acting as a young child was probably school stuff. Or I remember, have you ever heard of a colony holiday?
A colony holiday?
Yeah, enlighten me. Isn't it?
It could be.
My next sister up used to go on them, and they became sort of legendary. You got sent away. I remember going off on a coach all on my own right across the country, and then you'd stay somewhere.
With a group of other kids?
From all over the country, no kids you knew. And then you'd... it's like maybe like the American idea of camp or something. But it was hippie-ish. Like, there were lots of people sitting around fires and singing.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. Yeah.
I can't find any reference to it.
I've never... When you say about camp and picking up, and we were probably all camping and making fires, were you?
No, we stayed in these sort of rooms with other kids in these big houses.
In like big dorms type of things.
With a monitor who'd be like in their early 20s.
I don't think that'd be allowed nowadays, Poppy. Sure. If I'm on it, I mean, I don't want to be the colony holiday police or anything, but...
Well, yeah, maybe not.
But probably, look...
You see, that was quite scary. The whole thing was quite scary until we did the acting. And then
Why was it scary?
I was lonely.
You were still shy?
Bit shy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was meant to enjoy it as much as my sister had, and I didn't. And I just, yeah... You know, and there were some people there who were quite... I can still picture this girl. And she was quite, like, massive. She just did loads of sitting on people's laps and snogging really hard. And I was like, oh, this is all really grown up and I don't know what's going on, you know.
Yeah, we know those types were really intimidating.
Yeah, what was cool and what was, you know, just like, I don't really know
I'm not ready for that.
Yeah, but the acting... Then we did some acting, and that was like, oh.
And what was it kind of the end of the summer play type of thing, was it?
Or no, it wasn't even as official as that. It was just a bit of acting, you know. One day you'd go and take a plaster cast of a horse print.
Yeah.
And the next day you'd do a bit of acting.
Right.
You know. And then, I don't know, it's just activities.
But was it worth going to do the acting there? Did you come out of your shell a bit more?
No.
No, it wasn't
No,
worth
it was just
it.
A moment that I enjoyed, and I remember the person, whoever it was, saying, oh, you're really good at this. It's that thing when someone goes, oh, you're really... You, I can imagine, you see a kid, and they're loving it, and they're quite funny. You'd go, oh, you know... Well, you
can tell, can't you, when you see young kids, you go, you should focus a bit more on this.
Cause and I can... you just suck that up as a kid, don't you?
Yeah. Especially you see that light behind the eyes just sort of come on, and you go, you've got something there.
Yeah.
And how did that make you feel when you were told that? Did you think, oh, I am on the right path?
Yeah, I think so. Although I think I always thought that whatever actors were was a long way from what I would be. Like, they were kind of confident and... A bit more eyes and teeth, you know, a bit more out there, extrovert people.
Yeah. Even though you were shy, would you say you were confident?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bit both.
Yeah.
I think that's possible.
I think that's a really beautiful mix, actually. I think that's really nice.
I was just a bit odd, you know. I think if you're a bit odd as a kid, other kids know that, don't they?
Well, they can. I think they can smell it.
Yeah.
I speak from oddness.
Yeah.
From a place of oddness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly as a kid.
I mean, maybe a lot of people feel that they're odd. Maybe that's just the human condition, but...
Well, I think the older we get, we want to be more honest.
Yeah.
Well, certainly with ourselves and with other people. We go, yeah, no, I've never been part of that. I'm kind of this, and I was this.
Yeah.
And that's all right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a healthy way to be, isn't it?
Well, you strive to be healthy, don't you? It's certainly something I would want to... And I think we want to pass that down to our children to go, look, it's all right.
Yeah.
If you're not that star footballer or you're not that, it's all right.
No, you're right.
Because look at what you can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your knowledge of dinosaurs is...
Yeah. Second to none.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really true. You get really proud of the things that they love.
Yeah.
I think.
But it's like, as an actor, isn't it? Do you know you have to go... I've definitely talked about this before. Knowing your limitations as an actor, the older we get, we go, well, no, I'm not... good at A, B, C, and D, but E and F, I'm all right. I can hold my own with those two, and I'm going to be proud of that, and that's going to be my selling point.
Yeah, as long as you balance it with that.
Yeah.
It's always too much self-deprecation just doesn't do you any favours in the end.
No, but there's also, there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's typical, but I definitely think I was a lot more arrogant in my 20s about, you know, I've sort of screwed a few things up by telling people I was great. You know, I don't think you should tell people you're great because I feel much more measured about it now and, like you say, much more self-knowing, I think.
Why do you think you have a period of that? Because that sounds very, from the little I know, that sounds very out of character, doesn't it?
Oh, right. Yeah, well, it does a bit to me, actually.
Yeah.
So maybe I was trying to counterbalance that. And also just, I think it's a bit of a mystery about how you kind of proceed sometimes in this job. And sometimes if you don't, some people are just like effortlessly charismatic and available and it kind of...
Yeah, but are they?
Well, is it effortless? I don't know.
Are they really?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's a good point. But then if you think you've got to put effort in, sometimes you can misdirect it.
Yeah, true.
You know, you can try too hard or you can be... too arrogant, or you can, you know, you can get too obsessed.
Or it's like what you're saying, you know, be too self-deprecating.
Yeah.
And
that
is not healthy at all.
I think I just better keep my mouth shut in America because they're very clean like this, aren't they? They're very positive. This is what I believe, anyway.
Well,
professional.
We'll
find out.
We'll soon see. You're professional, Poppy.
But they don't
Come
do
on.
That. Oh, yeah, I'm professional. But they don't do that. Oh, it's just silly. You know, they don't do any of that.
Oh, no. Well, that's what I'm talking about, you know, the confidence, arrogance,
border.
It can be too much. Mm. Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, just get off that line and just be,
But, you know, you're not American.
No, not yet.
Not yet. We'll see if you ever come back.
Yeah.
So after school, what happened then?
Oh, well...
How did you do with your O-levels and your CSEs? Did you come out... all right.
Yeah. So I did, just to go back to the Amdram thing.
Actually, yes.
My dad. So my dad's an interesting character and he was a teacher, really. I mean, as a young man, he'd been in the war, you know, literally.
Yeah.
When he was in his early 20s.
Yeah.
And then by the time I came along, he was, what now is kind of normal. He was 46 when I was born, but it was quite old then.
Yeah.
My mum was 44. So, and he was a sort of unfulfilled actor in lots of ways.
Was he?
So he was quite big on the Amdram scene. He was quite a sort of serious player.
And did he open the door for you to...
Well, I just think wanting to be... Yeah, watching him do stuff and doing some stuff with him, which was quite interesting, and just seeing all these plays. I mean, there seemed to be like four different theatres that he would do plays at.
Really?
Yeah.
He spread himself around.
Well, there were just loads of people... doing it, and there was a little campaign that eventually bore fruit to open a rep theatre, professional rep in Norwich, which is not going as a rep anymore, but it's still a venue.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
What's it called?
Yeah.
It's all right, we'll find out. Google.
No, no, because I know it.
Go on.
It'll come back.
Okay,
I've actually done a play there.
Oh, have
one
you?
Of the first two seasons I did a play there, yeah.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah. So that's how keen they all were on theatre and stuff. And he was very clever, my dad, and he was good. Particularly good, he had this beautiful voice, and particularly, like, if you wanted something narrated, he'd be the man to go to.
Oh, would he?
Yeah, no. And quite troubled a bit, you know, battled with depression and lots of stuff going on for him. So his day job was, when I was little, was he moved on to teaching teachers.
Right.
So they had teacher training college. They don't really exist anymore, but...
Don't they?
Well, I think you do... They, anyway, got... subsumed by the university, and you do your PGCE then.
Yeah, because I remember teacher training colleges when I was a kid, yeah.
Full of young people learning how to teach.
Yeah.
And he taught something called audio-visual research, which was sort of cutting-edge. They used to film kids.
Oh, no. Oh, no, we've gone back to the 70s.
I know. They had, like, this room that I remember being in it that you would play in. And I just knew that this massive mirror, that wasn't a mirror. He told me it wasn't a mirror. But,
of course.
Yeah, they were watching kids through there. So it's a bit like that, you know, the secret life of.
In a way, it's no wonder they've shut down now, really. I mean, but yeah, no, I know what you mean. Those documentaries on Channel 4, the life of the four-year-old secret. Like, yeah.
And then he would use, I think they would use, you know, as a teaching tool, you'd use audio and visual research to help your teachers learn how to teach. Yeah. So that's what he was up to. But in of an evening, Peter Miller was on the stage.
He'd get up.
He had a big long leather coat, a big hat,
Did you ever ask him why he didn't pursue it?
No.
No?
No, I would have. As if he'd stuck around. I think he died when I was 19, so, you know, there'd be loads of stuff we'd chat about.
Yeah.
But yes, I used to watch him, and he'd get the big... you know, I watched him play King Lear.
Did you?
Yes. And
really ambitious stuff.
Big stuff.
I don't think they really do stuff like that anymore, certainly not what I know. Where I live around Gloucestershire, they do fantastic things, but it's very... Oh, if it's a play, it'll be an Agatha Christie, or it'll be something.
Yeah.
If it's a musical,
or maybe something funny.
Well, things like that. But to do King Lear.
Well, yeah, and something I remember. The first thing I remember really seeing him in, and this was a bit weird. Like, there was a Quaker meeting house which was one of the venues of these places, and it had like chairs all around the outside of a square room, and the actors were doing this thing called Moby Dick Rehearsed, which was about a bunch of actors rehearsing Moby Dick.
Brilliant.
And he was sort of the lead actor playing Ahab. I haven't read the book, Moby Dick.
I haven't finished it.
No, you started.
I did start it.
Yeah, but we know what it's about,
don't
we? It's about a whale and a man. And I just remember my dad, like... One of the local reviews once described him as the man with the India rubber face, because he had this really expressive face and no hair, and he was tall. And I just remember my dad's face like, this. And I was like 4 feet away from him.
Terrified.
So, like, you know, and everyone, we all had to go and see his plays, and everyone was like, Dad's doing some acting again, you know. You know, but I was proud of him as well,
because
he
say,
was sort
you
of
must
amazing.
Be. Yeah.
And then, anyway, did some plays growing up. With him, did The Tempest when I was 15, and then it was all very classical, actually.
How brilliant
a bit Chekhov
you,
and all
how brilliant that.
That
you were doing stuff like that at 15.
Yeah, yeah.
In Norwich at that time.
Yeah,
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. I mean, there were loads of like slightly lighter stuff going on as well, but that seemed to be
we need a counterbalance.
Yeah,
sometimes
you do. But I do remember this seeing Yeah, so looking back on like him playing the Lear, I've got these photos. It's like, I think they'd set it in early, and you know, like, what would you call it, like prehistoric Britain?
Yeah.
And looking at these photos, they've got like a lot of, not him, but the women have got a lot of eye makeup, like pretty eye makeup, and then like lots of mud all over them, and rags and stuff. And my dad was a bit the same. I mean, it just looks appalling. You know, it looks really like that. But it didn't seem like that at the time. So I think some of it was a bit like that. And I do remember going to see this play with him. I think it was an Ibsen play, and I was probably about 16. And there was a woman in it who, you know, she had been an actress. It was that sort of like...
I know those, yes.
But she was quite young. She'd been to Dartington, right. You know, when it still was a drama school.
Yeah.
And she was in this play, and I was just like, what is she doing? Because that is brilliant. And what she was doing was existing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I suddenly saw someone actually...
being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a real moment of kind of, oh, I see.
And listening.
She just... it's that thing you're sort of still trying to look for. It's like not you're not showing off, you're existing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a big moment. So, yeah, got a boyfriend in my sixth form who was quite... it was quite an intense thing, and he was studying philosophy at Leeds University, so... I kind of disappeared up that fundament. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm. And so things took a backseat there for a while.
Acting?
Yeah.
No, actually, I still carried on doing that because he was up at university. Didn't like it. Made him jealous.
Really?
It was quite an intense relationship.
Was it?
Me and him, yeah. But everyone thought, oh, she's going to screw up her A-levels. But in fact, because he was studying philosophy, and one of the A-levels I was doing was religious studies, which is sort of involves quite a lot of philosophy. So I ended up having this quite sort of fruitful, like, we'd talk about a lot of stuff that was maybe slightly beyond my years, you know. And got a really... got a good mark for that exam, and... I was headed off to university.
Where were you going to uni?
Well, I was going to go to... oh, God, this is so embarrassing, isn't it? Your young self. I was going to go to Bristol. No. I've got a place at Bristol.
If things are embarrassing, we don't have to talk about it.
Yeah, no, it's not. I just, like, I always go, like... yeah, I was going to go to Bristol.
It's because we never do this. We never talk one-on-one.
Yeah. I was going to go to Bristol, and that was all sorted. And then... so this the examining board of this religious studies A-level was a Cambridge examining board.
Right.
And they read this paper and they said, oh, this is our top paper for a young person this year. Has this pupil thought of going to Cambridge? And I kind of had not really thought of it. And also it wasn't very cool, you know. I don't know. It was sort of just slightly... it wasn't a thing for any of my friends. None of them were headed that way or...
but there's a possibility that you could.
I think we were just quite anti it. We were quite anti Oxbridge.
Really?
I mean, as far as it came into our consciousness.
Yeah.
We're like, why would you want to go there? You know, it's not... anyway, so they, I did go there. Yeah.
After all that, yeah,
after
I did.
After all that, yeah, I did, yeah.
I'd love another cup of tea, thanks, Griff. Would you like another cup of tea with me? Why not? And how was that? How did you, having come from it not being in your world to it suddenly it being all about your world?
Yeah. Well, I went to a college that it's actually got a new name now. It's called Murray Edwards now. It was called Newhall then. And it's a kind of... it was all female. And it was very untraditional and quite had a real relatively open recruitment approach. So there were quite a lot of people, quite a lot, you know, relatively, who didn't come from a, what you might think of as a traditional Oxbridge feeder, you know, background. So that was sort of relatively relaxing. It was all quite odd for quite a long time until you... it's like anything, you know, you move away from home, you go to a new place.
Of course.
And then you find your people.
Yeah.
And some of those people are still my people. And so that's amazing.
I love that phrase keeps coming up in this podcast because it's so important.
Finding your people,
it's so important. so important to learn that. But then when you do...
Thank you. Tea, lovely.
And while you were there, did drama come into play?
Well, you know, the whole thing happened all over again. It's like... The first year or so, I said, oh, I'll go to these auditions. And I think I thought, well, I'll do plays while I'm there, you know. And I didn't get any of the parts. So I was like, oh, well, I don't want to do it then. So I won't,
Is that not your confidence?
Really. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even go for many. I didn't really give it a good bash, you know. I went for, like... six or something, and Right. Everyone seemed to know what it was. Quite, you know, it was a clique. They were grown up, they'd been there for a while, they were confident, and they were already doing the plays. And so I just did other stuff for quite a while, and then I still had a running fantasy about it.
So you're still kind of unfulfilled, really?
Yeah, in fact, I went back to the Amdram Theatre in the holidays and did a musical, I think.
Oh, to get a little fix,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah, yeah, to get a little fix. And I think I used to go and watch the plays and stuff, so it was still all there. And then I remember my friends were going to take a play to Edinburgh, and I was slightly sulking. So I said, I'll come and see you, but I'm going to go walking first. So I went, stayed in the youth hostel above Whitby and walked that coast path.
Wow.
Yeah, and I knew that there was this...
On your own?
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. And Boggle Hole Youth Hostel, you've been there?
No,
that's
no.
Like a bit further down. That's the wrong coast for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Scarberry, the Whitby, all that area.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I know that this friend of mine, Lance, is going to be directing this production of Othello next term. And I just remember walking and learning the lines for Desdemona, you know, and thinking, yeah, just having that, I think maybe the walking and the sea and the, you know, the lines.
Solitude.
And yeah, just going, that's what I really would like to do that. And also because the older people, the successful people at uni were leaving, so I was getting to be a bigger fish. So your confidence grows a bit. Uni, I just heard myself say that, uni.
And, when was the last time you said uni?
I don't know. God, no, come on. So anyway, I got that part, and then it kind of rolled on.
That must have been great for your confidence.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed doing it, and I got myself a theatrical scar.
Did you? Yes. What happened?
I shouldn't really tell, but this, because I don't know, this fella Lance, who's still in the industry, it's right. Lovely.
So we can always beep his name out,
yeah,
so it's fine.
It's cool. He does film, I don't know what he's a director. He was really into kind of, like, it's quite funny, the rehearsals, actually. There was one rehearsal when I had to take the quite peculiar man playing my dad.
Right.
Because he was meant to feel abandoned because, you know, obviously Desdemona goes off with Othello.
Yeah.
I literally had to take him into Sainsbury's in town and blindfold him and leave him by the cheese counter.
No.
Yeah. Just that kind of director, you know, yeah.
We've all worked with those.
I left this postgrad. What did he do? You know, he was just a post. He was doing writing a. He wasn't an actor type person at all. I left this blindfolded man by the cheese counter.
Just this poor bugger roped in.
Yeah, and another time, me and the man playing Othello. So we were sort of working on the final, you know, the fight scene and, or at least the grappling scene, and when he kills her, and we ended up in this big room with all the curtains drawn and an unmasked knife. So I managed to roll onto that. So I got a little slice here with some stitches.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the side. I'm pointing to the side of my body.
There we go.
Yeah,
we can see
my theatrical scar.
Just near the rib.
Yes. So, you know, a lot of idealism and a bit of naivety. And I'd say that kind of characterises that time for me.
But still learning.
Still learning. Sometimes learning by our, not mistakes, experiments, like... A bunch of us.
I think that certainly still carrying on for me.
Oh God, yeah. Oh yeah, I know. Learning's the big thing, isn't it? Like really meaning it, that you really are open.
Well, I think, yeah, because it is one of the upsides of what we do is that you're never not learning. You never get to a point where you go, what? So, I'm a cabinet maker, and I've learnt my craft as being a cabinet maker. I can make the best cabinet possible. I can't make anything better than that cabinet,
yeah.
And I'm a cabinet maker. But if I'm an actor, it never stops. I can never make the best cabinet. It's always out of reach. I don't know why I said cabinet maker.
I totally love it, and I was also slightly like, oh my god, Craig's cabinet maker. For a minute, I was like, oh,
I wish I was.
It's like Arthur Miller. He's got a shed, and he's got. Oh,
do you know how useless I am at DIY?
I don't. I'm nodding.
I knew what. I thought, what has word spread?
No, but I know some of the most brilliant people in my life. Yeah, they don't, because they don't go near the DIY. They're not a have a go hero, which is what I am. But they're more like a kind of, no, I'm not going to do it right, so I won't do it.
No, if I want it, no, if I want something done right,
yeah.
If I can't do it, then I've got to get something.
Yeah.
It goes back to knowing your limitations.
Yeah,
even
though
I know my limitations as an actor, I'm trying to know my limitations as a person and as a husband and a father. And like,
it's safer as well, isn't it?
So much safer.
Yeah.
Look at my finger.
Was that you trying to do something helpful?
No, that was just washing up.
Okay. There's a scar. There's blood.
Yeah,
that's horrible.
All right. I tell you what, bloody hurt for like a good 24 hours.
Yeah.
I went through 4 Star Wars plasters. My little boy was not happy.
Didn't get a stitch?
No, it was grand. Yeah. We've gone well off road. Yeah. I don't know where we are in
it's
the world.
It's about knowing your limitations and our job can't be perfected. And if you think it can, then you're wrong.
Yeah, we're going back to university. End of university, how were you within yourself? Where were you? Where were you going?
So there was a sort of quite a few people kind of going to be actors or writers or directors.
Yeah.
And some of them still are. Some of them are doing quite well.
I'm sure. We don't name names, but it's fine.
We don't, yeah. And
tell me after. It's fine.
Yeah. Some of them are like people, like just brilliant people, you know, who were always brilliant. I'm going to say Sarah Phelps, fantastic writer.
Yes.
Nikki Walker was at this funny college, you know, brilliant people.
Yeah.
Perkins and people like that were around.
Oh,
you know,
it?
Yeah.
Were you considering yourself then, that's where I'm heading?
Yeah, I think it kind of, because I'd done enough experimenting and really kind of committed to it in a kind of, it was a playground. There was lots to do once you were in it in terms of making stuff.
Yeah. And
at that point, people were writing stuff. A bunch of us hippie idealists went round the country in an old ambulance doing really bad street theatre.
Of course you did.
Know,
brilliant.
Endless juggling. There was a lot of sort of, I don't know, it just seemed to sort of eat up our whole lives. So anyway, I did some auditions for drama schools for shorter courses because obviously I'd used up my,
so you used
my
to do
grants
a,
and stuff.
A postgrad 1 year.
I did 2 years in the end.
2 years?
At Webber Douglas, which doesn't exist anymore.
Doesn't it exist anymore?
No.
When did that disappear? God, I can't believe it's been this 20 years now, because I remember a very old girlfriend of mine went to Webber Douglas.
Yeah, I don't want to get the date wrong, but
do you know why it?
Yeah, because it was the lease ran out on the building, I think, and it was in a pretty smart part of town, wasn't it?
It
Gloucester
was.
Road.
Yeah, Gloucester
so,
Road. Yeah.
I don't know all the details, but I think it actually kind of, what would you call it, folded with Central for a few years. They put the Webber students.
Oh, did they kind of
Central
merge?
For a bit, and then that was it.
Right.
Yeah.
And how was your time there for 2 years?
It was basically really, really good. I think.
Did you sense it? Could you feel a change or a big difference from what you're doing at university to what you're doing at drama school?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think acting's not, if you do it with your head, you're not, it's not right. But good head is useful.
And a good head is useful.
I think I was learning that. I think I liked all the, a lot of the teaching, and then I threw myself into it, and I liked using my body and going, oh, there's that as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'd always done that instinctively, because that's what you just do, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, if you exist in the body and that, but to actually sort of pick it apart, and, you know, I quite enjoyed all that side of it, and I wouldn't say it got me to where I needed to be, but it was definitely, I'm really glad I did it, and in the spirit of what we were just saying, I'm never going to get to where I want to be. So it was part of the.
You've got to get
on
the. You've got to get on the path, haven't you? Yeah.
And to be around, and just to be around the real world of it, I think. That rather than, I don't know, because the idea of it, and it wasn't a very. It was a very. I think quite a lot of down to earth people went to that college, and they would definitely prepare you. They wouldn't prepare you to be a star. They'd prepare you to be employed. That's what they wouldn't
wow.
like, you know, like the sort of person a director wants, you know, to work with. And they'd also prepare you to be director-proof. I remember that.
Explain that.
I don't really understand director-proof. It. I think it means...
I think we could throw some pearls of wisdom out right now if we be director-proof.
It sounds really controversial, doesn't it?
I think it sounds very exciting. But is it the Holy Grail?
I think it means that you bring... You bring enough...
enough ideas to work with for someone to
You've
work
with.
You've
got structure to work, even if you're finding it, you're not getting it from someone from outside.
Yeah.
You're getting a... You can offer, and you still offer something, you know. Still deliver something.
Did they prepare you for a failure?
I kind of implied it was quite likely, I think.
How did that make you feel?
Pretty resilient. I think I was just like, I don't think that's going to happen.
That's brilliant.
I just was quite naive in a way, I think.
No, but it's like what we were saying before. You've got to have a big... You've got to have confidence and not let it fall over into arrogance, but, you know, a friend of mine says you've got to have a big suit of armour if you want to be an actor, because you're going to take a lot of hits.
Yeah. Yeah. And one that kind of grows back. Or something, like a sort of, like, or gets...
Yeah.
Or you've got to keep going to the blacksmith and asking for a bit. Where would you get your armour made? Anyway, you've got to ask...
Nowadays...
You've got to keep going back for more armour.
Internet. You can find anything on the internet nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people would say the same thing, but some of the most brilliant people couldn't hack it. They couldn't do it because it was too painful.
Yeah.
Some of the most, like, you just go, oh, I'll just watch them all day. And then, you know...
How do you deal with the dark times and the painful times?
I think
all the times when... Oh, yeah, no, that... Yeah, the work isn't coming now. Or,
yeah.
But do you channel your creativity somewhere else? Do you thought, you know what? I don't need to be creative now. I need to be a mother, or I need to be a wife, or I need to just fucking do something completely different to clear my head, and then I'll go back to the creativity and get it out of the drawer, and that's when I'll need to feed on it again.
I think currently...
Yeah.
And like we were saying at the beginning, you've got two jobs, basically. So when you're not doing the acting job, you're doing the parenting job.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're doing the both at the same... Obviously, you're always doing both at the same time, but it's so... So that sort of takes away some of those questions.
That's true, yeah.
For me, I feel at the moment, anyway.
What about prior to to being a mum?
I think... I think...
just had a little visitor.
A little, very apologetic.
It happens.
Yeah.
Because early start, when you come out of drama school, did you find it easier or more difficult than what you were led to believe?
Our... quite eccentric head of acting.
Yeah.
So this is a long time ago. It's like another world, it really feels like. But she said, you know, Kenneth Branagh got himself a job. So he was a bit older than me. He wrote to every theatre in the country. And so I did.
Did you?
Yeah. I got on a typewriter with typos, photocopied the letter and filled in the name.
Brilliant.
And I got a job at a theatre in Milford Haven in Wales. And so I went off and did that and I thought, oh, this is how naive I was. So I turned up Milford Haven, went to my digs, met the lady I was going to live with and then went to buy some tuna fish.
As you pasta. Do. Yeah, you're in Wales.
Local shop.
Fantastic.
And this woman just like served me and she didn't really look at me. I thought, it's so strange, you know, because here I am buying my tea, my dinner, my supper, you know.
My breakfast.
Yeah. And she doesn't know me now, but in 4 weeks' time, she will know me. Isn't that just so amazing?
That's lovely.
Yeah, cut to. Like, it was quite a good show, actually.
Was it?
Yeah. But, you know, empty. Hardly anyone knew. Well, the Halford West Theatrical Society, that was a big audience.
I'm sure at the time.
But the lady from that shop definitely wasn't in that audience. You know, so welcome to... What can often happen, sadly, is that, you know, it's hard to get audiences sometimes. So, yeah, that's what I was like. And then I did a bit of Fringe in London, which was a bit... that's still is, isn't it? Quite hard, because you put your heart and soul in and get paid very much money. For
and,
that.
You know, you still get, well, how many are in tonight type of thing.
Yeah.
And but then again, sometimes you don't do things for that. You have to. I think sometimes you have to work out the reason why you're doing a job, and it can't. Sometimes it isn't. You have to weigh out artistically and financially, and everything gets more complicated.
It does get more
complicated.
Like you can feel very strongly about it on principle, but when it comes to an individual choice, as you say, you do it for you're learning and you're.
Also about not doing a job. Yeah. If you're fortunate in that situation, you have to do things or not do things for the right reason.
Yeah. And hope you know what that is at the time.
Still striving.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about stopping? Or has anything become more important to you, or is your... need for it, or your want, or your passion, as the air come out of the balloon. Because I know inevitably it does for everybody.
Yeah. No, so I think the answer is like it's not the balloon's not. I think so many people my age would say this now, and you see them doing it, and it's brilliant. There's got to be more than that. It's not a lack of appreciation for doing the work, but it's like getting to do the work. It doesn't always meet your capabilities, your desires, I'm speaking in a position where I've got this really quite interesting job that's kind of sandwiching this little chunk of time, so I'm in a very safe place but I can really see that it might feel all the frustration, that feeling like I'm in a desert or I'm not getting to, you know. So I think what you see is people teaching and writing and making and getting involved with the young people. And they're so amazing, young people.
Yeah.
The ones I know are making stuff happen and trying to counter this sort of drift where only people with privilege can do this. I just think that's going to be, and I've got to force myself to get into being part of all that.
Well, it seems to be the way, because the need to be creative and have an outlet, because we've got zero control 99% of the time about what we do, we have to make that path for ourselves.
Yeah.
We have to do that.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, there's no... Yeah, what are you...
You've backed me into a corner. I've got kind of no choice.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
What am I going to do? Stop? No, I can't do that because that's not in us.
it kind of comes down to whether you're the kind of creative person who's just doing it for yourself, which, or you think you're part of a bigger picture where it's worth doing it because you're with other people and it's for other people.
Yeah.
And it's something that you're Susan said, and when you talk to her, you know, I can't remember precisely what it was because my memory's a bit iffy, but it's about, you know, why are we doing this? And, of course, there's all sorts of, like, deep reasons why we want to cut, our ego needs to do it and all that, but if you've got a bigger picture, then there's a lot out there to do.
Yeah.
To join in with and to help with, and we do get to an age when we can pass stuff on. Don't have to be diffident about that.
No, but also because the older we get and we are learning more, we're still striving to learn more, and sometimes you open a door that you never thought, you certainly wouldn't have walked through that when you were 25.
Yeah.
But then you get into your 40s and you go, actually, yeah, this really does appeal to me now, and I thought that skill was never really in me.
Yeah.
Or that I never thought that's like a little fire in me, but it does.
Or something like teaching or directing or watching other people or writing.
Certainly writing something or directing.
And getting a massive buzz out of it, actually.
Or sitting down with some microphones and pots of tea and talking to people.
Making
See
something.
See what I've done there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Poppy, I'm so thrilled we managed to find the dates to get together.
Yeah,
but what I really
want to
do, if you don't mind, is I'm going to let you get settled in New York, and then I thought we'd do a little Skype podcast, and we'll just catch up with you, see how New York is and how it's all getting on.
I'd love that.
I think it'll be really interesting.
Yeah, thank you. It'd be great. Yeah.
Loads of love. Thank you.
Yeah.
Another one down, another brilliant episode down. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, a massive thank you to Poppy. And as you heard, what we're going to do is in a few months' time, we are going to have a little link up with Poppy over in New York just to see how things are settling in, how she's settling in, what Broadway life's like, is it different for when she was in the West End, and all sorts of stuff. It'd just be nice to have a catch up because she's great. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. What was I going to say? What I was going to say was there was a great piece in The Guardian this week by Danny Lee. If you follow me on Twitter, I did retweet it. And it was primarily about Gary Oldman. I think it was Gary Oldman and the demise of the working class actor. It's a really interesting piece. Do go and check it out. It's by Danny Lee. And I did retweet it. And a few people came back to me with a lot of anger and sort of bitterness. And what I was saying, what I responded to was that, you know, art and drama, it can be found everywhere. Of course, people have chances, and you can forever be thinking, oh, well, they had a better start than me. And of course, that's going to happen, but that's fine. But all I'm saying is maybe anger is not the way to smash walls down or to make change. I don't really know what I'm trying to say. Look, don't listen to me. I'm not preaching. I'm just saying, go read the piece. It's great. What I will say, though, is for everybody who, and I get a lot of messages saying, you know, we can't afford this. I need to train. I can't do this. You only have to look at somebody like Laurie Metcalf. Now, if you don't know who Laurie Metcalf is, Google. She's an incredible actress, and she's one of the founders of Steppenwolf Theatre Company. They started Steppenwolf. They're all actors. They're all roughly the same age, so some of them had to play younger and they play older. And they're in a church hall, right? six or seven of them. They were sometimes playing to family and friends, sometimes playing to four and five people, and they kept on doing it. And they ended up building a theatre, which is still there today. You get what I'm trying to say. Okay? Enough of this. I shall get off my soapbox. As I say, I'm not preaching. Maybe just something to think about. Something else to think about is episode 27, which is next week. I know who it is. I'm really excited. If you want to know, you know where to find us. Follow us on Twitter at @twoshotpod. Same for Instagram, same for Facebook. If you want to leave us a message, you can do that. You can also drop us an email, which is twoshotpod@gmail.com. Thank you for all the messages that we get. We really appreciate you downloading, listening, subscribing, and rating and reviewing and all that, you know. Until next week, I've been Craig Parkinson. He's been producer Griff, and this has been the Two Shot Podcast. You take care. The Two Shot Podcast is presented by me, Craig Parkinson, recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. Our music, our brilliant music, is courtesy of Then Thickens. Cheers.